time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. So good to have you with us. It's Monday, November 9th, 2020. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. And guess what? It is for mortgage professionals. We do our best job to get you information in a timely format. We're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format so you can listen to it anytime and anywhere. Yep, that's a little text coming in there. Now, I hope y'all enjoy the podcast. How's that? Anyway, we're so glad to have you with us here today. We've got in our Hot Topics segment, Brent Chandler, founder and CEO of FormFree. He's widely recognized as an innovator in mortgage and financial service technologies for the last 25 years and has been creating some really leading edge stuff. We invited him on because if I want to talk to someone who's a real critical thinker about what's going on and the direction of what we've been talking about recently, which is software that can automate and improve the performance of our underwriters, getting back up to 8 to 10 loans a day. Hey, for those of you who are new, we used to do that. Not the 2.5 that we've been stuck at for so long. But Brent is going to talk about that. And also, we're going to hear about some exciting things that they're doing at FormFree, too, that I think are very innovative. And so get perspective on what's going on in the industry, where he sees it going. And then we're going to be talking about specifically some of the things that are happening at FormFree. So very excited to have Brent Chandler joining us here a little bit later in the topic. So special thank you to goes out to Industry Syndicate. They do a great job of hosting a lot of podcasts, ours included. Check out IndustrySyndicate.com as well as MortgageMedia.com. We also want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Great conference that they had. Go back and listen to the interview we did with Dawn Williams, who talked about the conference. And we appreciate Dawn and all that she did for the annual conference. Oh, you're there at the MBA site. Go be sure to check out the Mortgage Action Alliance application that you can download on your phone to have your voice heard in Washington, D.C. Dear God, we need our voices heard there. Also, Finastra, whose Fusion Mortgage Bot solution does a great job of solving so many solutions. They have a webinar coming up on Thursday, November 12th. Check it out at 1 p.m. Central Time. It goes from 1 to 2 p.m. I urge you to check that out. There's a special link in our show notes so you can register now. Mention you heard about it on the podcast. Another very innovative company doing some things. Third largest fintech company in the world. Finastra has got going on. Also, the Mortgage Collaborative. I'm really excited to have Tom Gallucci coming on. We recorded an interview with him, our partnership with Tom and the whole team there at the Mortgage Collaborative, the TMC. We're very grateful for that, as well as our partnership with Lenders One. So two co-ops that do a great job of adding value to mortgage bankers and lenders and their vendor members. So check it out at our website, lickinonlending.com, or go out to each of their respective websites. Also, the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, great for their sponsorship, as well as Indicom. They do so much to help at every stage of the mortgage life cycle. Check out their automation. And we had Linda Bomar on, and got to check out that previous podcast, as well as Incelerate. This is a company that has leading edge technology helping mortgage lenders bring their expertise into pre-designed campaigns, coming together to enhance the power of a borrower engagement. Ainsworth Advisors, also a company that allows you to have a board of advisors. Many companies are looking for a board of advisory service, especially as you apply for Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Jenny May. Who is your board of advisors? Check out AinsworthAdvisors.com. Also, AI Assist, helping bring artificial intelligence into the marketing side of the business. They've got some great stuff that they're doing. Check that out, as well as Celebrity Home Loans, Innovient. Ted Kramer's got some stuff to help you and your pricing. Got to check out how that works. We're going to be having Ted come on and talk with us here in an upcoming podcast. He's a client, he's a friend, and you've got to check out what they do. It's amazing. If you're in secondary marketing, check out Innovient, Innovient.com. Knowledge Coop, as well as Mobility RE and Modix. Both of these companies help you attract and recruit some of the top talent, LOs, as well as find out who they're really doing business with and a real amount of business. What is the real business volume? Also, Velma, VendorCert, Vidyard, and finally, a special thank you goes out to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Matt with their contributions to this podcast each and every week. Let's get over to Rob Van Rapphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. This past Saturday, MBA President and CEO Bob Brooksmith issued a statement congratulating Joe Biden on his election as President of the United States and Kamala Harris on her history-making moment as Vice President. Brooksmith said he looks forward to working with them, the new administration, and the new Congress on a wide variety of issues, including access to affordable housing for all Americans, helping first-time homebuyers enter the market, assisting homeowners, renters, and landlords negatively affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, and ensuring liquidity and a level playing field for lenders and borrowers alike. Brooksmith went on to say that the housing market continues to be a bright spot in the current economy, which is why it's critical to support policies and initiatives that ensure its success, while at the same time maintaining a fair and transparent regulatory environment that protects all participants. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
Good job. Appreciate Rob Van Rapphorst taking the time to do that each and every week. He does a great job. Appreciate it. Be sure to sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance application. Download it on your phone. Have your voice heard on the Hill. They do so much to help us. And no, you do not need to be a member of the MBA. Have your voice heard through this app. You should be. So Tricia Magliazzo will tell you many reasons why you need to be. She does such a good job there, as well as the whole team. So thank you and kudos to the MBA for all they do for our industry. Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Bad votes. There's no need to be down. They say new votes. Pick them up off the ground. They say more votes because they're in a new round. Investors aren't unhappy because a divided Congress means little interference from new legislation. Meanwhile, in mortgage land, few bad apps and lots of new apps make happy lenders mini clams. So are mortgage bankers complacent? Do they lay off risk consistently? Are borrowers locking in? Don't get boiled like the frog. Jump out and lock in and just go rest. At the YMCA, you'll sleep well with no risk today. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter. It's fun to stay at the
YMCA. Love that song. Check out TM Spotlight and sign up for Les's free newsletter, but you can also put in the word power and get the paid version for free. How about that? Check it out at tmspotlight.com. Matt Graham's here to give us a real view of what's going on in the world. I mean, how quickly things have changed. Things are been a wild and crazy day earlier, but is it starting to settle down, Matt?
Yeah, no, we all know the election happened last week, but leading up to that, last week was really a story of last month. And by that, I mean that September was very calm, very sideways, slightly stronger for the bond market. And then October shows up and takes us in a completely different direction.
No kidding.
Treasury yields start lifting, but we still always need to be on the lookout for some influence coming through there. So anyway, why was October the way it was? I think it's fair to say that at the very least, the election was a part of that. We have COVID to talk about, too. We're going to get to that in a moment. But investors are preparing for the election, however they're going to prepare for it. And a lot of people have been really curious about how that works. And Dave, I know you love the chat on MBS Live to tune in and see what people are talking about. And probably the most common question I've gotten over the past month is, how does the election impact rates? What are rates going to do if XYZ happens? And I think heading into the election, it probably had most to do with something Les just alluded to, which was the notion of the blue sweep, which could get, if Biden won, it would give the Democrats complete control. They could pass more legislation, spend more money, make bigger stimulus. And bigger stimulus hurts bonds on two accounts. First, if it has an economically positive impact, that is bond negative because we know bonds generally feed on economic negativity. And then, of course, the bigger it is, the more treasury issuance it implies, because treasuries will be used to pay for that stuff. More issuance, more supply, higher yields. Pretty simple stuff. So that was the narrative going into election night. And that is why yields spiked very quickly to the highest levels in months when Biden jumped out to an early lead in a few states. And it's why yields reversed when those leads evaporated and things got murky. So why didn't bonds then weaken when Biden odds improved later in the night? That's a big question, right? How can we talk about this narrative and then not have it apply later on in the night? So again, to Les's point, we have to look at the Senate. And the Senate race didn't look like it was going to give, and it still doesn't, depending on the Georgia runoffs, it didn't look like it was going to leave the door open for a blue sweep. And also bonds did weaken a little bit in the coming days as Biden's odds improved. And the Georgia runoffs cast some doubt as to what will become of the Senate in January. I'm not an expert on political forecasting. All I know is that there's some uncertainty there. I don't know how likely any particular outcome is. At any rate, still managed to go into the weekend at pretty decent levels. Now, yields were higher on Friday night than they had been, but they weren't as high as they were on election night. But it turns out the joke was on us if you've looked at the market this morning, and it's hard to miss. And the joke goes something like this. How many COVID vaccine headlines does it take to kill the bond market? There actually is no punchline yet, Dave, because traders are too busy selling bonds still. The rest of the joke will be written once the selling is done, but it will not be done until morale deteriorates some more. So Pfizer, 6:45 a.m. Eastern, comes out with a news release about their vaccine with, I think, BioNTech, I don't know how you say it, being 90% effective. And this appears to have been, it's not a magic cure, but it's promising enough for markets to hedge their bets that this is the biggest COVID vaccine headline we've had so far. People have been following this, and the number of people that have gotten sick in the study had increased to such an extent that they were able to glean this 90% figure, which is a lot higher than people were expecting. And just to put things in perspective, the FDA lists the minimum threshold for creating these vaccines at 50% efficacy. So this drives home the importance of just how big COVID is as the ongoing market mover for the bond market. There is still a big disconnect between treasuries and MBS, however, and the MBS are definitely hanging in a lot tougher than treasuries, and mortgage rates are doing great compared to MBS as well. So there's a bit of a cushion for the mortgage market specifically. But this is something I think we will be talking about in the coming weeks, because the mortgage market is doing so well, we have to start to wonder, could there be anything that causes the Fed to reassess whether or not it needs to spend $40 billion a month if MBS spreads are so incredibly tight versus treasuries? And it's something I'm going to be talking to contacts about and researching, and look forward to having more information for you there in the coming weeks. Bottom line, though, starting out on a very negative note this week, hoping to hold at some sort of supportive ceiling around 0.96 in terms of 10-year yields, and maybe around 103 in terms of 2.0 UMBS coupons. It's going to take a big bite out of rates this morning. It already has. Lenders repricing for the worse, but hopefully we can see things level off as the week continues.
Yep. So yeah, it's fun to read the comments in here. And you also have some other tabs in here. And no, time is short today, but to go back to watch that market for us and encourage everyone to go check out mbslive.net. And you got real-time market data and analytics and some just more information than you can imagine on there. It's so valuable. And when you sign up, use LOL to sign up, because you get an extended trial period and no credit card is required. Matt, you do such a good job with it. I'm grateful to have you on the podcast each and every week.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good one.
You bet. All right. Alice Alvey is here live with us. Alice is CMB, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. Good to have you here, Alice, with this week's legislative update. What's happening?
Yeah, I love Les's piece on no risk today, right? So we're, I guess, from the legislative standpoint, right, they're all still busy doing other things. And the way the markets are today, like Les said, from his viewpoint, is they're not paying attention to us. So that's great. So for what I wanted to talk a little bit about was the CFBS, which is the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, has a proposed regulatory framework out there that's open for comment, and we have until December 1st to respond. The reason this is a big one and noteworthy is anything that happens in an audit ends up potentially impacting the price that we offer to consumers. If audits are expensive and costly, if we have to do a lot of things operationally in order to stay in compliance with certain regulations, even if they are in servicing, our chance to potentially make up some of that revenue or account for that maybe either in interest rate or in higher fees. So we watch this type of thing very closely to understand really, okay, what is the CFPB's mission here? Are they trying to just standardize things in an existing format that we already know, or are they looking to increase the requirements as a part of what they're calling standardization? So far, when we look at it, and the Mortgage Bankers Association, of course, is looking at it as well, it looks like things are just trying to align with existing liquidity requirements, as well as some risk and other capital requirements. But there's a lot of questions here. So I do recommend for all of you out there who are responsible at your companies for commenting on these, this CFPB's proposal is something to really take a deep dive in and make sure that your company is responding. Because where it gets a little difficult is for the smaller companies who may be only conducting, you might be a big originator, right? Maybe you've got billions this year, but you're an interim servicer. So that kind of loops you in on how your state where you do business and will be regulating you. So we do recommend that everybody jump in, comment, reach out to the Mortgage Bankers Association if you want to get some additional feedback. But there's a lot in here. Did you know non-mortgage banks now service more than the banks? And we crossed over that line about a year ago, a little more than a year. And so we really are under the radar, and this is an important one to respond on. Everybody needs to make their voices heard, as you mentioned earlier, under the Mortgage Action Alliance. Now, this isn't a piece of legislation. It's through the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, which would be a proposal through their website at cfbs.org. Did you know, a little tidbit for the day for everybody, there are about 240 pieces of legislation at the state level just related to COVID. We're all trying to identify, okay, can I travel over to this state over Thanksgiving? And I'm trying to figure out what I can and can't do. It's literally changing daily.
So our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone dealing with the COVID. We understand what's going on. We're fortunate down here in Texas where we're at least in that little community of Marble Falls, we're getting along pretty good. Not too many issues. Things seem to be getting back to normal. But anyway, Alice, thank you so much. Say hi to Bill. Alan, appreciate you and the whole team up there. Thank you. Let's get over to Alan Pollock. Any words of wisdom?
So all I will say are a few very short comments. So anyways, I just want to remind folks that we're getting near the end of the year. Technology, super important, actually. A friend of mine over at Fannie Mae just today mentioned that there's a new post that they put out about the vendors that are now ULAD ready. Make sure you read that and check with your vendors. I told her I'd give a little shout out to Fannie Mae there. Second thing, and it is really important. That's why I think if you haven't verified that your vendors are ready, or that even you're ready, or if you're using Salesforce to integrate with data, or if you have your own data libraries, it's just super important that you're aware of the structure of data could change, the fact that there may be new data fields, one or two fields could have been retired. The next thing is next week, we're going to talk, David, about what to do with the rest of the year. We still have time. There are projects that are important. Some people do have code freezes as we get towards the end of the year. My suggestion is you want to hear next week's podcast. We're going to talk about something we've mentioned in the past called the Moscow Method, which focuses on four very important aspects of project planning, which is must have, should have, could have, and won't have, all software development. So we'll talk about that next week. Yep. Again, if you're looking for work to be an auditor, to work with guidelines and pricing data or support or customer service. I've got a number of vendors and lenders that keep asking me if I know people. Reach out to me. I'd be happy to play Cupid for you. You can reach me, Alan, A-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors.com.
Good. Appreciate it, Alan. Look forward to next week and all that you got for us. I know it's good. Appreciate it very much. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, is in the house. Good to hear from you.
I'll keep it fast and short, and then expand upon it and let people know where they can go to get more information. So the idea is that the reason for my sabbatical was to come up with a presentation that I thought would be interesting and valuable. I do want to quickly mention, though, that I've been teaching the accounting series through the Mortgage Bankers Association for the last 3 weeks and for the next 2 weeks. So if you want to know about your business, then you need to know accounting. So sign up. Go to MBA.org.
Yep. By the way, so I had a couple of clients tell me that they're going to it and they just loving the information. So you're doing a great job. And got several of our clients that steered over there. And so they're telling us this is really good stuff.
We've always appreciated the feedback. I'm glad that they are attending the webinar. Thanks for that. So the content I'm going to talk about today, along with a bunch of other stuff, is also available on my teaching website, my drshell.com website. And if you can spell Lickin, then you can spell Shell. It's S-C-H-E-L-L. So as I was preparing for today, I asked a couple of business owners. I said, you tell me what you want, what you really want. And so the feedback I've been getting is that business owners want to be successful, content, and happy. And that's probably the same thing any employee would say as well. So in looking through all of my piles of doctor papers, there's, I think, a path to help people find success and contentment through a process that I'm actually labeling personal Kaizen. So Kaizen is a Japanese word that means continuous improvement. It's one of the reasons that the Japanese manufacturing operations through the 70s now kicks Detroit's hiney because of this process of continuous improvement. And it's applied to a business setting, but I believe it's applicable to a personal setting as well. So I think an important foundation for success, to be content, to be happy, can be pursued through a personal Kaizen, which means personal pursuit of improvement. And I think by doing this, it does a couple of key things. It, one, will help to remove thought dependency because we're going to learn through self-improvement how to identify the next step. It's also going to develop intellectual independence. So we're going to be able to identify how to make decisions, how to get to the next step. And I think the part that's most important, and I'll say what it says, but I need to describe it, and we probably won't get there today, but it's through the empowerment in the ability to validate ideas. How do you know if an idea is good, bad, or indifferent? The validity of an idea is a very fuzzy thing, but there's actually some process that we can use to help examine how that fits. And as you start beginning to think through this process, to begin down the path of a personal Kaizen, again, it's the personal pursuit of constant improvement. Adopting a personal Kaizen means always pursue why. This is probably one of the most foundational elements to this. As the listeners know, Dave and I were business partners for about 10 years, starting 15 years ago or so. And one of the things that we would do on every transaction, a project, a sales call, a closing of a transaction, whatever it was, we would do a post-mortem. We would go, huh, that didn't go well, or huh, that was great. And most of the time I would say to Dave, I can't believe you said that so perfectly. But you examine every event. You don't just skip past it. Every day is a learning opportunity and the opportunity to pursue why. The point is the constant pursuit of a personal Kaizen creates the ability to then leverage knowledge. And I'm going to wrap it up with this last point, because I think that by embracing this idea of pursuing a personal Kaizen, it helps people pursue the why so we can learn the how. And if we pursue the why to learn the how, we'll then be able to learn how to make decisions, how to explain options, how to be heard, and how to hear. Both are super important. How to hear and how to be heard. And also it will help to define how to define your worldview. And I think the pursuit of understanding a worldview is colossally important. And I actually give some references later on about one way to do there through some writings by Robert Bork. So I'll wrap it up there for now.
Yeah. So I appreciate you, Andy, and I appreciate the wisdom you bring. Go out to drshell.com. This is our transition point. We transition out of our weekly update. We now head over to our hot topic segment. If you're listening live, just stay right here. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, it's the next hot topic. So let's get started with the hot topic. Today's hot topic, we've got Brent Chandler, the founder and CEO of Form3, joining us. And we're going to talk about what companies are doing to dramatically increase the number of loans an underwriter could underwrite in a day. That's what our focus is on our conversation. Last week, we had Joe Tyrell of ICE Mortgage Technologies. And today, I'm really honored to have Brent Chandler here. And we got to give a little shout out to Christy Moss, formerly with Fannie Mae, who has found a wonderful home there with you, Brent. And it's so good to have you. And of course, Christy's in on the line somewhere back there listening as well. But Brent, good to have you here, friend.
Dave, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And Christy is just a consummate supporter of not only this industry, Form Free, Fannie, and all those borrowers out there who are looking to enhance their lives.
She is a marketing department, a promotion company, all rolled into one, social media, SEO, everything. She's just rolled in one. I've never seen that gal. That's just amazing. So anyway, we need to have her on sometime. We will. Talking about social media and how to make your voice heard everywhere all at once. Omnipresent. But I want to, Brent, now you've been on in the past. So we've had you on as a previous guest. And by the way, your podcast that we did interview from is getting so many downloads and it's still being downloaded. And I really believe it's because of the sincerity and the place where you speak, which is a great heart as a human being, as a person. So we're expecting today the same, no pressure. But for those that don't know you, give us a little bit of your background. Yes, real quickly, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn page, but let our audience just get a little flavor of who Brent Chandler is.
Sure. Thanks again. And I really enjoy being on the show and no pressure. I'm Brent Chandler, and I am the founder and CEO of Form Free. It's a fabulous company that I started in 2007, and we've been on this journey together for over 12 years. But in a nutshell, to your point, I'm just a very passionate person who loves tech and to solve problems that literally help people and improve their lives. It started really in 1996, where I was part of a team that created the first online trades that led to automation of an industry that was otherwise manual. And that just opened up an entire opportunity for me over the last 25 plus years in computers and technology and mathematics. And these are all things that I love at the same time and how that betters people's lives. It dabbled in algorithmic trading, sophisticated ways to capture direct source data, to create efficient systems for identifying risk. And that has parlayed into the current space that I'm in. And that's when my eyes opened to this great opportunity with respect to lending. And that's really ultimately what helped me create Form Free. I just have this passion for automating systems, and it has to have that touch point of helping consumers and borrowers and people in general.
The word passion is so significant. It's passion with a purpose. We talked about how underwriters used to be able to underwrite somewhere between 8 to 12 loans a day. We lost that because of all the complexity, how things just fell apart. Now, the average is 2.5 loans per day for most companies. Now, there are some doing it better. And I want to talk about what you're seeing. So your first place where I want to talk about you as a thought leader and looking up and down the landscape of technology, what do you see going on?
Sure, sure. And I'd like to just capture it in this way. I look at things in threes a lot of times, and I think three is a powerful number. But what happened? Where are we now? And where are we going? You know, what happened, it's plain to see, hindsight's 2020, but as we know, when things break, pendulums swing. And what happened is the system broke, and we identified a lot of inefficiencies and duplication of verifications and just data that wasn't really fully understood. And we didn't have the tools necessarily to address it immediately. But what we needed to do was verify the information, and that led us to duplication in triplicates in some cases. And that just bloated the system. And that was the immediate fix was, hey, how do we patch this thing up immediately so we understand that the data that we're getting is actually true and accurately reflects the borrower? So that introduction of these verifications, in some cases, like I said, triplicate, induced this bloated system, right, of manual processes, because that's all we had. I'm going back to 2007 and even before. And so it was a natural pendulum swing is to say, hey, the system's broken and we can't afford to go through this again. So in the meantime, before we truly come up with the full automation, we've got to just patch this system. And that meant gathering 4506Ts. That meant doing more verifications on assets, income, employment, identity, and those types of things. And the systems were accustomed to receiving manual paper-based verifications. So that's where the pendulum swung, and then the work began. So what we recognized at that point was that, hey, look at all these areas that we could begin to patch or to fix or to automate. And it all really boils down to understanding risk, doesn't it? And what they found was, and there's a 500-page dossier that I would encourage people to look at, because it really did point out some of the breakdowns in where the industry failed. But it also pointed out some opportunities that we could work towards. Does that mean that people just inadvertently or just closed a blind eye to doing the right thing? No, I think that technology was inefficient. I just don't think it existed at that time. And so the regulations and the processes that were in place were as good as it got. So that had to be changed. But the inability to assess a borrower's ability to pay became my focus. So that's what the industry started to really delve into. And we had a lot of great companies that are doing a lot of great things in working towards this more efficient system. When you look at Ellie Mae, Blue Sage, Black Knight, Roostify, the GSEs have been entrepreneurial like nobody's ever seen. They have been leading a lot of the efforts that are automating these manual processes, looking at direct source data and determining different ways to look at employment, look at income, look at asset verification, understand the things that are going to help us determine risk. And I want to point out one other company that's doing some amazing things that is unrelated, directly unrelated, in some ways can tell a big story. And that Zelle came out literally within the past few days and announced they'd finished their billionth transaction. Wow. This is a company that was created in less than 2 years by big banks that has created efficiency in transacting and moving money, online money movement, for various reasons. Small business lending, various other payment transactions, peer-to-peer transactions, et cetera. But what it tells me is this quantum leap that's occurring with this push towards understanding the risk and understanding how to seamlessly transfer information back and forth from counterparties. And that is where I get really excited. I can pause here and let you ask me another question.
So tell me, where is this market going?
Where it's going is, again, I think it's a push by all these great companies that I've already noted. If you look at Ellie Mae and what they're doing and the combination with ICE, if you think about what's actually happening there, we're creating efficiencies that are going to remove duplicate processes, and we're going to streamline the underwriting process. And that's going to allow you to get from that 2.5 back to 8 or 12 underwrites per person and begin to see that efficiency come back in. How are they doing it? And what's going on? So this all falls back, in my mind, to one thing. It's the common denominator in every loan you do, Dave, is what? It's who? It's understanding the consumer's financial identity, which is that asset, income, employment, identity, public records, credit decisioning, et cetera. So in order to do that, we've got to have really accurate data at the source. So by collecting that source data, we can understand Brent Chandler's financial identity. What we do is what we see is this blockchain effect, where the tip of the spear is the consumer. The consumer is the common denominator in every loan that they do, whether it's a mortgage loan, an auto loan, a small business loan. But in the mortgage industry, the consumer is the thing we're trying to understand the risk on. We also want to understand collateral and other things, of course, and that's getting more efficient as well. That's why there's multiple holes out there in the industry that various companies are beginning to create solutions for. But when we bridge this gap between borrowers and lenders and ultimately the investor community, the impact is ginormous. It's a huge efficiency on expanded credit inclusion, which leads us into this opportunity to reach all consumers of all demographics. Project Reach is a huge project that the OCC is pushing out to the banks to say, hey, open up this industry and lending to everybody. And so where assets and credit come together, what we've recognized is that the FICO scores of the old are no longer efficient in understanding Chandler's ability to pay. And that's where we meet with this data?
I just love this because it's getting into the people part of it, which is the closest underwriting that we've had to that, which is my preferred way of underwriting in all cases, is the VA approach, the residual income approach, because it really does get more personal because you're looking at the circumstances rather than these boxes and checking them and all that. Alice, good to have you on joining in on the discussion. Questions that you have for Brent, especially with your unique position there at Union Home Mortgage?
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Brent. This is a great conversation. I know a lot of folks, a lot of companies out there are using your products for the automated income and asset verification. And to me, I'm amazed at how difficult it is for some companies to fully adopt and embrace the technology. I know you guys talked about underwriting efficiency, but from my vantage point, from customers I worked with, it really wasn't processing, right? The underwriters looking at the end thing, and we're saving a trip to underwriting maybe, but the processors are the ones who are getting the time savings by not having to go through all the verification process. What are your thoughts on where we're at with adoption and what might be slowing things down? What do we need to do differently? And I'm assuming COVID helped for touchless.
Yeah, no question. And really what we're talking about is empowering consumers. It's putting the power in the hands of the borrower. The adoption curve is happening. And what we're seeing is the uptake of not only the efficiencies of the asset verification, but expanding that model even further. So the idea that an asset report with a full employment and income data in it, Dave, you touched on residual income, we can calculate cash flow and discretionary and residual income out of a bank statement transaction detail when we couple it with other data points. But essentially what we're doing is we're bringing more power to the borrower, and that adoption curve is happening. We just have to look at the digital lenders, look at Quicken, and look at some of these other providers that are just exploding on the scene. And what we are seeing in our processes with the GSEs is that there is uptake happening on an exponential level. That'll continue, by the way.
There's a lot of reason to be hopeful about what's coming up. Alice.
I'm good. Thanks. That was my main question. I could go on about the efficiencies because they're hugely valuable. I will yield to next questioner.
I'll just follow up on that question, if you don't mind, real quick. With respect to transparency of data, affords us the ability to expand the credit markets beyond the traditional vectors that we've traditionally looked at for component analytics. So when we think about a borrower, we've oftentimes looked at a FICO and sized them up, and we have enough data around that. But with the pandemic, so many people have been impacted. Their incomes have been impacted. Their employment's been impacted. And so the traditional credit scoring, et cetera, has taken a hit. So transparency of information allows us not only to understand the hit that traditional credit scores have taken, but couple that, append it with additional data elements of the willingness and ability to pay of borrowers so that we can expand that credit box. It's a good thing for the country. It's a good thing for this industry. It's a good thing for the banks.
It is. It's a good thing. Anytime we can expand the amount of people coming into the market and do so responsibly so that we're not hurting people, that's the deal. Alan, I know you are good friends with our guest today, and welcome to the microphone.
It's great to be in the microphone, David. Thank you. Brent, what's happening, my friend? Hope everything's good.
Thank you so much. Yeah, same to you.
Veterans Day coming up. I know you served our country, so thank you first for serving. And I thought it'd be very much appropriate to talk about eligibility and helping veterans get loans. And overall, I think it's, and I don't know if you're prepared to talk about that today, so if I sort of threw you off course, I apologize, but I think it still falls into the same thing. I even have a friend right now who is moving to Virginia and is looking to get a VA loan, doesn't know anything about it and how it helps. So I think really focused on your technology, helping to move the process along, because not every loan is sold to the agency, to Fannie and to Freddie. And just because of that, your technology still fits. And actually, I will say my company is currently in talks with you guys to talk about partnering and doing some really interesting things. And there are some really cool things you're doing. And what I will say from my side of the fence is I have a lot of people that just want the automation. They want the data. They want the reports. They want that easier process for their staff, even if it's not connected to the agency. So maybe it'd be a good time for you to chat about that.
Sure. Yeah. As a vet, thank you so much. And to all those that have served, I love this country. And being a Marine, was one of the greatest things that I've done in my life. And so I look at vets, and we work closely with a lot of lenders who serve vets. And the idea is really, again, to help those who have helped so many. So with respect to automation, it's important to understand where the data comes from. And direct source data is a big key initiative of FormFree. When we think about how we serve all people, veterans fall into that category. We work with the Veterans Association and the FHA. We do accommodate transparency of automation for all downstream users. But the idea is that it's only as good as where the source comes from. So if the source is direct, it's immutable. We can begin to tokenize this information and share it with any constituents, any parties. And so by blockchaining this information and carrying it in a simple token, every vet should be in a home, period. We shouldn't have homeless vets. And so one of our causes is to really create outreach to create this transparency and this data collection, empowering those veterans. And there are some banks which we work with closely who are enacting programs to do these types of things. And it's really about reducing costs and creating better streamlined processes so that we can all chip in and help these veterans who have done so much find a place to live.
Alan, I want to get into talking about what you're specifically doing. You are seeking to work with Brent in a number of ways at Open Close there, but we're just thrilled to hear about, you know, where things are at.
I want to make sure it's very clear. So there are other folks out there that get some data, but I even found myself, and I've always known this about FormFree, but I learned this past week, you are very different. You are not the same, and you do some very unique things. So if you don't mind sprinkling that in there so our audience can hear that.
Yeah, thank you. And we are excited about our new partnership and what we're doing together. And this really extends and parlays the mission that we set out to do, which is truly when we talk about where we can help streamline or create better efficiencies. But there's no other place that I needed to look except with me, the borrower. And what I found was that the person on the other side of the phone didn't know me. They didn't know who I was. They knew nothing about me. And in order for me to receive this loan, which I desperately needed to buy this home, because see, I wanted the home. I didn't really want the loan. I needed the loan, but I wanted the home. That's what I was driving towards. That's what we looked to. So I recognized that moment, they didn't know me. They got to get to know me. And I was willing to give them just about anything I needed to in order to accomplish their goal. And it was an arduous task. And I said, gee, there's a better way to do it. And the better way to do it is to understand my financial identity. Am I able to pay this loan back? And if I can prove that and meet the guidelines and meet their needs and do it in the most efficient way possible, then we could get through this process much faster. And that's our financial identity passport. And what passport really is, it's that understanding of who Brent Chandler is and all my financial information, my DNA. And I transfer that in the most easily way possible. And that we call straight through processing, and we've tokenized that. So it's a unique token. But if the data is no good, then the token's no good. So the data's got to be 100%. We have zero tolerance for any inaccurate data, period. And that's what we do. We synthesize that information. We verify it, certify it, analyze it, and then report on it. And there is zero tolerance for failure. So it's incumbent upon us to go to those sources directly. There's no people and there is no paper. And what we're doing is collecting this digital data and validating it. And then we corroborate it. When you have multiple points of data corroboration, the failure rates are infinitesimal. They're tiny. They don't exist. You can reduce and eliminate risk. And that is our job. So what we do to do that is we look at billions and billions of records. We look at 50 to 100,000 data points for each borrower. And we do this in nanoseconds. So latency is virtually removed from the system. What we're doing is using biometric facial recognition to understand who the borrower is and then to tap into, with their permission, this is all permission to buy the borrower. It's empowering the borrower. We're not doing it in a black box over here and then you're waiting over there for the magic result. Oh, did I get the loan? No. You're going to know as a borrower instantaneously before the lender does what you can afford. And here's the kicker. Imagine if this lived with you indefinitely. In other words, as you go through the journey of life and you make these purchase decisions, these sell decisions, you have bonuses, you have income, you have hits to your income. You can actually see at any given time, in real time, with 100% efficacy, your ability to pay. Now you are empowered to find the lender of your choice. You are empowered to go out into the market and say, hey, I know I'm capable of affording this new car. Here's my token. I'd like to work with you.
I love that.
It's mutable data at the blockchain. It's the source data, meaning it's the latest and greatest. See, the problem with credit decisioning today is aged, right? Things have changed. Things are changing day by day. This is a very real-time world we live in today. And with the pandemic and with the economic situation of people losing their jobs, of closings, et cetera, everything is in flux. So it's really important to understand in real time what my cash flow is. There's gig economy plays that are also playing in that aren't always captured in the traditional pay stubs. So we've got to be able to look at all the ramifications of borrowers today, which is very complex. But when we assemble it and then we verify it, corroborate that data, we can truly tell you about that financial identity. And only then, in this immutable data blockchain, we can tap into and work with the downstream players. These are the great companies that are magnificent in doing their automation of underwriting. So when you look at Ellie Mae, when you look at the things that Roostify and Black Knight and Blue Sage and Open Close and all these other companies, what they're doing is very good. But the hole that we're filling is that consumer transfer of their information.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Very innovative. How does this speed up the process of underwriting?
Well, imagine if you can make a decision based on that output. You can make a decision and then the rest of the story. Let's go get that title. Let's go get that flood. Let's go get the rest of the collateral. A lot of the collateral is being automated today as well, because all this data is being has been gathered over decades that are in databases and we can understand. And there's a lot of automation in that space as well. So all these different facets of underwriting are also being simultaneously automated. But the one piece that's always in flux is that borrower. So when you blend, and Blend is doing some great things. So when you integrate this borrower risk component to the rest of the story, you can streamline the underwriting. And that is ultimately, if you think about what ICE is doing as an exchange, that's what exchanges do, right? It makes sense when you start to apply logic that stock markets employ. What do? You can make $1 million trade on your phone in less than a second.
Alex, as you're listening to this, what are your thoughts running through your head? I love the idea of a token that has the latest, greatest personalized information. There's a lot of innovation here, Alex. We're not seeing in the market right now. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I've been sitting here visualizing the idea of a passport and working with how passionate, Brett, you guys are about the consumer being in control. And I think that obviously as mortgage bankers, we always think about the consumer, but we still always feel we're in control of pulling all the information together and making that final decision. And that passport concept of here are the assets, here are the income, everything's immutable data, and this is a valid piece for all my verification documents, would absolutely save time if the customer was walking in the door with it, because now as an originator, I don't have to try and make that sales pitch to try and talk them into giving over passwords and that type of thing. I think it's a great, very forward-thinking next steps for consumer behavior.
No, I think it's a great question and one that I spend a lot of time thinking about. And we've got concepts of, as this token, if you think about a token in the mortgage industry, what it ultimately does is creates a 1003. All the data pre-populates that 1003, that standard form. And so that's this beginning stage of where the token transfers into mortgage, where you have a 1003. It's no longer a report and then sifting through data and then re-entering it. So that's another time saver. But that 1003 becomes the 3.2 that feeds the rest of the system. So we bridge that gap. And the question is now, how do we permeate the audience? How do we get 110 million consumers using the passport? And I think what it boils down to is there's a couple different paths we can look at. But if I cite Zell again, which I think is just doing amazing things in very short periods of time, and unlike anything we've ever seen, 180 million consumers have adopted this application to transfer funds. Those are extraordinary numbers. And these are the times where people are now adopting those types of applications to do their perfunctionary payment solutions, et cetera. So one would stand to reason that this could transfer also into the passport. So we see opportunities where this could be an application that was more or less available to the consumer base, and the tokens would be something that would be charged for. So when that 1003 was created, the underlying data becomes important to the lenders, and the lenders would acquiesce and say, yes, this is something we would pay for. So how do we get it out to the masses? I think the adoption curve, there's a couple different paths. It could be up through the lenders, and lenders make it available. So we would encourage conversations with partners to determine the best way to get that out there. Suffice it to say that consumers are hungry for better ways to do things in a more consolidated way. This piecemeal, give me this information, fax this, still take a photo of this, it's inaccurate, it's wrought with potential fraud. This eliminates all of those conversations with respect to the accuracy of the data.
Yeah, the fraud piece would be pretty amazing. If you look at Fannie Mae's A1 certainty and you look at what the goal is, this product could literally free people up, and they're free from all the representations and warranties that have plagued so many.
One of the greatest moments of my career was on that 5-year journey, testing, pilots, et cetera. But when Tim Myopoulos announced at the MBA in 2016, the announcement of Day One Certainty, we were the only company in the world that received it for asset verification. Wow. It was one of the highlights of my life. It's based on patented technology that we have received a patent on as well. But to create that rep and warrant relief for the lenders was absolutely the right thing to do. And we are now in pilots to expand that to other components of the data that we're retrieving, which include employment and income. So this is going to continue. And there is a story to be told around direct source data with straight through processing gives us greater purchase certainty.
That's so good. I love the innovation that you, because of your passion, bring to the industry. And I'm so grateful for you and, again, the innovation that's coming out of FormFree. And I encourage people to check it out. So head over to the website, formfree.com. And then as you go there, check under products. You'll see the products under the first tab there and learn more about the company. What do you recommend for people wanting to learn more about your product?
Hey, I love LinkedIn. We've got 30,000 plus followers, and I'm very active and very responsive. Any questions directly, feel free to come through FormFree. The contact us forms are there, but also I will respond personally on LinkedIn, and I'd encourage that as well. And you can learn a lot about FormFree on LinkedIn as we're constantly pushing out our press releases, our news, or just things that are moving the industry forward.
There's so much more communication I'm doing through LinkedIn. That's a wonderful tool. Brent, thank you so much for coming here. Again, something that Alan mentioned that I want to say is thank you for your service. You were in the Marine Corps, Semper Fi, and thank you for what you have done and so much for our nation and serving our nation so unselfishly. And then the innovation you're bringing to the mortgage industry. Welcome. Jess, thrilled to see it.
Thank you so much. And David, you're giving me this opportunity and all your guests, it's an honor. And I am grateful to have served this country. And I will just say, I would just close with, in my life, I've gone through a lot of changes myself personally. The one thing that I've recognized is that giving is the highest form of living.
Yeah.
And we at FormFree really embrace that. We really do.
Yeah. You are a great example at many levels. I encourage people to get to know you. Connect with Brent on LinkedIn. I was thinking, as you were saying, you have over 30,000 followers. I do as well. I was thinking you probably were about 3,000 until Christy showed up, and then you jumped up to 30,000 because that's 40 people she tries to. Probably, I'm sure she had a lot to do with it, but I'm sure you did it well.
So, this is a cute story to that is computer science mathematics has played a role in a lot of my life, but algorithms have also. And I was able to create some algorithms early on in the early days of LinkedIn. I recognized an opportunity that this was an underutilized social media platform. And boy, did I have personally connected with every single one of them. So I used algorithms to help me identify and reach out to that audience. And it's a very cool thing when you can apply mathematics to some of this stuff. So I enjoy that.
We appreciate you. Appreciate you coming on again in such short notice. It was really good. And I encourage everyone to check out what's going on at Form Free by heading over to the website. Share this podcast with some of your associates, and especially up in the underwriting department at the C-suite. Share it so they're aware of the opportunity of the passport, the token, the whole blockchain, everything sharing data and making it personalized. Can't wait to hear about what you have yet to come out. So we got to have you back. Christy's a great advocate getting you back on. So we will have you back on soon. Hopefully even before the end of the year, we can talk more about some of your new products that you're rolling out. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you being here.
Awesome. Thank you. Take care.
You bet. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Listeners, we want to tell you, be sure to check out our sponsorship page. The MBA, CMLA, Indicom, Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility, Modex. There's so many others out there. Finastra, great to have you as our listener. Check out our sponsors. They make this program possible, and we appreciate you letting them know. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.